Hey everyone, this is Steve Mathis. Thanks for listening to the podcast show. Before we begin the show, I just wanted to give a little shout out to my new friends at BTOsports.com. BTOsports.com has teamed up with yours truly to provide you podcast listeners with a cool free deal. What you want to do is go to BTOsports.com and check out all the sweet stuff from Fly Racing, Fuel Graphics, O'Neill, Stella, FMF, Liat, and Vortex. They carry these lines along with pretty much anything else that you need for your bike or body. So you go there. The cool thing is, you order more than $100, and really, what's $100 these days? James Stewart has that much in his Lambo ashtray. Anyways, order more than $100, type in the offer code MATHES, M-A-T-T-H-E-S, in the coupon section, right when you're checking out, and you'll get a special deal. It's so special, they haven't even really told me yet what it is. So to recap, go to btosports.com, spend $100, type in MATHES in the coupon section upon checkout, and get some kind of hella super sweet deal. Remember to check out their closeouts at BTOsports.com as a proud sponsor of the BBMX race team. All right, on to this week's show.
Your brain may explode from listening to this show. We will not be held responsible if it does. What are you going to do about it anyway? You won't have a head. You have been warned.
Welcome to the BTOsports.com podcast show. Brought to you by Trans World Motocross. Hosted by Steve Mathis.
Welcome to the BTOsports.com Transworld Motocross Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Mathis, but more importantly is who I have on the line. It's none other than Jeff Emig. Fro, what's going on?
I am headed home from Fox Racing, and I'm sitting in traffic. So
nice. Now, I've been
I killed two birds with one stone.
Yeah, really. Thank you for doing this. I know you're a busy guy, and I've been following you on Twitter, and it seems like you've been traveling a lot, having some travel issues, and then also getting stuck on the 91 freeway quite a bit.
Yeah. I did the 4 days in Daytona, and I stayed long. Mm-hmm. I didn't get home till 2 a.m. on Tuesday morning from doing the RCU event and all that.
Yeah.
And then I had a Thursday morning flight out to Toronto.
Nice.
So I had 50 hours in L.A. last week.
Yeah, really, huh?
Midweek. So, and two kids and a wife, and, you know, the kids, they don't really understand what's going on. So,
yeah,
it's kind of heartbreaking at times, you know, that you have to miss time with your family to go do the job, you know. But mm-hmm. I love my job. I love my industry and my sport. So I'm pretty fortunate, I think, all around.
Yeah, when you look at it in the big picture, right?
Yeah.
Did you have trouble getting out of Toronto? I did. I know a bunch of other people did, too. Did you get
out
of
Toronto? Yeah, but I got into L.A. on time, so my bags didn't make it, and the parking garage was totally hammered. I didn't leave the airport till 2.5 hours after I landed.
That's right. That's what your Twitter said.
Plastic.
Yeah.
I'm like, can this really be happening today? You know, so.
I got stuck.
And that's really when the travel goes as planned, it's no big deal. But it's when it doesn't, that's when, you know, this 10 weeks in a row and all that starts to wear on you, you know.
Yeah. I had to stay an extra night in Toronto. Brayton did, too. Both of us got stuck there, kind of with weather-related in Newark. So.
And the real point, you know, it's one thing for us in the industry, but it's a totally different thing for the athletes themselves who have to try to stay in peak physical condition. And what we noticed on the speed broadcast is that the comments from Trey Kennard, who's now riding a full season for the first time in his career, and he says, wow, you know, these flights back and forth to L.A. and back, and, you know, we did Indy, Atlanta, Daytona, Toronto, it's really starting to tax him. And he just like Uncle Sam's going to when he gets all of these bonus checks, I guess. But
yeah, exactly.
you know, it's really a good situation for him to come and do these events, because then it is going to teach him what he's going to have to prepare for next year.
Yeah, real quickly before we get into the season, what was your worst travel story as a rider? I know, like, McGrath Book went to Rochester, New York one time instead of Minnesota, but what was your worst getting in late, you know, had to race in the morning type story?
I don't know if it can compare. I don't have anything that's anywhere close to ending up in the wrong city. So, and that's, you know, fortunately throughout all of my years of flying in and out of Ontario, California, ONT,
yeah.
I managed not to end up in Ontario. Is it Ontario, Ontario, Canada?
Yeah, Ontario is the province. Yeah, you didn't end up going
okay,
to Ontario.
Okay, the province, yeah. So I feel that I'm pretty fortunate.
Of course, there was a few times on Saturday nights where you just went right to the plane, but that was when the racing was done.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that was a couple times we had the private jet, but yeah. So
let's talk about the I want to talk about the season for sure, but right away I'm really interested in your take on the RC Amateur Supercross / the next day RC University School. You were one of the instructors. I guess talk about that, and was it cool? I mean, did you get to pound out some laps? How was it?
No, unfortunately I didn't get to ride. I did everything I could to try to line up a bike. I was actually going to race on Sunday, spend a little time on the grass again, you know. Get some of that black sand in my riding shorts, but I didn't get to do that. So,
well, hold on a second. I was at Reed's house, and they were prepping a Cowie 450 for you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But the problem was that I couldn't get it back to Reed's house on Sunday
on
or
Monday
night. So that was always the issue.
Okay.
Yeah. So it wasn't that I didn't try.
Yeah.
It's just it just didn't line up, and it wasn't meant to be. But the Ricky Carmichael Supercross and the RCU on Monday was pretty special event.
Yeah.
Mainly because, you know, we were there, you know, shaking hands, kissing babies, signing autographs, stuff like that. But everybody was so appreciative.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, there were smiles everywhere. You know, this is one of the nicest facilities that anyone could ever race at. You know, all the pit garages and asphalt everywhere,
right.
Beautiful grass track everywhere. And I think that everyone who got to participate in the race and then also, you know, the university the next day, I think they walked away with one hell of an experience. And, you know, I don't know what the entry fees were and, you know, the stuff for the RCU, but everybody that we spoke to, they were just so happy that they signed up and that they went through the experience.
Yeah, really. Now,
so, yeah.
Was it sort of like you took one section and the rotated riders, or did you take a group for half a day? How did that work? Did everybody get taught by you? How did that all work?
Yeah, five different groups. I chose the start area, the starting line. Over the years, I've spent some time, you know, teaching that, and
yeah.
I think that I have, for the most part, you know, I had a pretty good setup, and then we had five different groups, and they all rotated. Clark Stiles, Jeannie Carmichael, Jeff Stanton, and Ricky Carmichael himself. And then RC would come over and demonstrate a session, and then he would go to his own group and work with them.
Oh, okay. All right. So everybody got to see him ride and do a start and go through a section, and then they would listen to one of you guys talk about how he did it.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
Yeah, so
yeah.
It was so I left there feeling so good about the day.
Right.
Like genuinely going, wow, that was pretty cool. I'm so glad that I, you know, spent the extra time there, you know, which was extra a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ricky asked me to be a part of it. We shared some great stories with the fans. We gave some great insight during our writers' meetings and things like that. And I think that for the first shot at it, I think it was hugely successful, and I feel that way because of what the people in attendance and the parents, the fans, everybody, you know, from their comments, they
right.
were pumped. Super pumped, should I say.
Yeah, exactly. When I first heard it, I thought, man, what a great idea. I actually couldn't believe the Speedway was accommodating enough to let you have not only a race and, you know, have a bunch of amateurs running around in the garages and all that, not only a race on Sunday, but the school on Monday. So kudos to them. I thought I was more amazed at that, but what a great idea. Both things.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole group, from MX Sports, Cotter and Nick McCabe and I mean just the whole the whole group, they gave you the same type of experience that you get at Loretta Lynn's and the other events that they do, which is a top notch amateur motocross racing. I don't think that there's any better events to go to as an amateur motocrosser than the ones that they do. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean it was a great idea, and so I'm not sure exactly how it all came about, but I was a little jealous that I didn't ride, but I was really, really happy to be a part of it.
Now, was Stanton yelling at the kids and making them cry, calling them names?
It was incredible. He was out there making kids run laps around the speedway. It was horrible.
Exactly. Go climb those stairs.
Yeah, they came to me, and they're like, bro, man. I said, hey, you guys got to rest if you want to be a champion.
Yeah, exactly.
Training.
Let me tell you how to be a champion, my way.
Yeah. There was Jeff's way, and then there was my way.
Right, right.
You want one champion? You want one Supercross championship or three? That's the question I got to ask.
Exactly. Exactly. Right? I'll take the one. Right? Hey, I'll take one.
I'll pick the one. Okay, let's have some fun.
That made me laugh out loud. The starting gate, of course, is a little different from your days. They put some clay on it, which was a great move. But, you know, in your heyday, it was the 6-foot dugout trench by the main events.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but it still got pretty hammered.
Did
because
it? Yeah.
Everybody had such a good time. I mean, especially the kids, man. They were just out there winding it out. I mean, the ruts after the gate were like a foot deep. Totally rough and just choppy, and these kids are just hammering the throttle, and I'm like, you guys have got to mellow out. And they're just, it was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, and the vet guys are like, man, I'm so tired right now, you know. And then there was, you know, the guys that are in between, you know, and a lot of the girls, there was a couple of really good girls that were there riding, Raceley Weimer, and then, hold on a second. I'm about to run into something.
Please don't hurt yourself.
Sandra Rios, you know, and both these girls were extremely driven, and they were just listening and just soaking it all in. And, and then, you know, everyone in between. It was pretty cool.
Wow, that's cool. And I think for myself, the coolest part would be, like, was there interaction off the bike between you and Stanton and Ricky and everybody? That would be, to me, worth the price of admission right there. You know what I mean? Just to hang out with you guys and get to ask you questions.
Yeah, we did a riders meeting, and then we did a couple of events where we went into the winner's circle area, where we did a few photo sessions and stuff like that. And unfortunately, a few of us, you know, I had to skip out right after the final class to make a flight, so I didn't get to stick around for the final graduation walk and all that stuff. And for sure next year that if I'm invited back and I'm a part of it, that I'm, you know, I'm not going to miss that final thing, you know?
Right, right. So. I thought it was a cool idea. Kudos to Fox, too. Fox was a big part of it. And obviously Fox is still a big part of Ricky's post-retirement career. So it was
cool.
Yeah,
so they had the guys from Fox were there from our product development, you know, designer product development. All the way down to Chris Onstott. We're giving, seminars to the parents about how to take care of your gear, make it last, what's the best way to care for it, things like that.
Oh, yeah, really?
They had all different things here. It was awesome.
Oh, that's cool.
So, Andrea Lee was there trying to educate the parents on education and how to continue a child's education if you're dedicating a lot of time and travel to racing amateur motocross. So it was cool.
And had you race, was there anybody in the vet class that was there to give you a run, or would we have looked at a 1-1 day for Fro?
Oh, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah?
I'm not sure about that. I probably could have got the whole shot.
Yep.
But even the 4 or 6 laps or whatever it would have been might have been a little tough for me.
Give me a break. So. Anyways,
You know what? Kevin Walker was actually there on hand, also Kevin and his wife, and he didn't race.
Oh, okay.
But he was there assisting, and so
hanging out.
You know, he's always tough in the vet class. Man.
He is.
That's cool.
Hey, what do you make of Ricky in the booth with you guys? A little bit of criticism here and there from some riders and internet jockeys. What's your take on that? I mean, I don't expect you to – does it step on your toes a little bit? Do you like it? How does that go for you? You know, I'm just curious.
Ricky doesn't step on my toes at all. We get excited and we – you know, we talk over each other a little bit, and a three-man booth in a Supercross is it's a lot. But after we did three weekends in a row, you know, and we had a great time. Ralph and I certainly love having him in there. The only thing that I don't love is how there had been some riders, you know, really giving Ricky a lot of crap on Twitter and things like that that was pretty unwarranted. Because they're looking at it so one-sided and thinking that he's one-sided and he's all about Dungy and yada yada yada, and you know, if our producer and you know, everyone from Feld and all that, if they're going, hey, look, you know, you really need to straighten it out, that's, you know, playing favoritisms, then it might be, you know, we would need to take a look at it. But people get pretty sensitive about the things we say, and I mean, get over it. What can I say?
Yeah.
You know, I think that whether it be myself and Ralph or with the addition of Ricky, I think that we call a really square race, and we're complimentary to the riders that deserve it and to the riders that we don't. I think that we have a good way to add constructive criticism without just being criticism, you know?
Right.
Because nobody wants to hear that. I mean, you know, I certainly didn't, but once I grew up and I wasn't, you know, an immature racer, and I say that about myself,
right,
is that I could take the constructive criticism and the things that David Bailey, how he used to judge me, I could take that, you know, much better. And I go, wow, you know what, he really was right.
Wow. As somebody who writes and criticizes and praises for a living, I can attest to the people being very sensitive in our sport, and you on a greater scale than me, even, you know what I mean? So, the only thing I have to say about it is that Ricky knows Dungy's program inside and out, and he knows Suzuki's program. So when he's on the air, he's going to talk about, nobody wants to talk about what they don't know about, you know, so he knows a lot about
that.
So he's going to talk about that. I noticed that you speak a lot about Kawasaki and Michael Byrne, who you're good friends with. Nothing wrong with that. I would talk about Tim Ferry. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Because it's what we're...
We know you'd talk about Tim Ferry, even if he wasn't on the screen.
Oh, I know. I'd still bring it up. I could never do that job.
Well,
but
and that's what the viewers don't understand, is that we talk about this stuff. Hey, you know, who do you want to take? What do you want to talk about? Okay, why not... You know, Ricky's like, okay, why don't I talk about Dungy, because I'm really close. I know what's going on with him. If you talk about the other guys, you know, I tend to spend a little bit of time in the Cowie rig, grabbing a coffee, whatever, hanging with my, you know, with my Cowie guys.
Yeah.
And that's all that it is. And so, you know, being a little hypersensitive, you know, everyone needs to kind of chill out a little bit, and you know, just in, and I, you know, set in the booth one weekend, and you're gonna change your ideas about all of it. You know.
So. Yeah, it was funny because the last podcast we did, you know, you gave Ralph a lot of props for how hard he works and how hard that job is. And I've heard a few people tell me that they've changed their mind from your show that we did together, because they didn't really realize all the things that, you know, Ralph has to do. So
and to add to that, I don't think there's anybody out there that believes in what we're doing and the future, the positive future of our sport, more than Ralph.
Right.
He really sees great things for this sport, and he feels very fortunate to be a part of our crew. That, you know, Speed puts him on our show, and it all comes down like it does. And believe me, you know, he is part of the glue in the program. He's been a leader for Aaron and myself, to teaching us the ropes, and hey, this or that, you know, bounce ideas. Well, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and I think you know, that this, you know, this is the best way to do this, or this is your answer.
Right, right.
And so we're more than fortunate to have somebody like him to help lead the show, you know, along with great director, producer, you know, everybody. It's pretty cool. And so, right. you know, and especially I know your guys up there in Canada that work on the TV show, they obviously love what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, no, absolutely. Getting back to the Cowie thing with you, I mean, 1 week, I think it was maybe last year or maybe it was this year early on a while ago, you know, you had talked about a fork change that Ryan had made and how much of a difference it was. And, like, to me, you only knew that because you had been in the truck and you asked some questions and they, you know, they told you generalities about a fork change. Well, that brought education to the viewers. Do you know what I mean? Like, that was a positive thing on the telecast.
Yeah, and there's more stuff that there's so much more that I would like to know on race day,
mm-hmm.
so much more technical inside information that maybe at times I do know, but is not appropriate that we wouldn't want you to talk about that,
right.
but, you know, just understand what we're doing. So sometimes, or even, you know, a lot of the times, technical stuff is I'm only giving you what they will allow me to.
Right.
And in our sport, what drives Ralph completely nuts and our producer Chris Bond and all them is that nobody talks about anything. Injuries. Uh-huh. You know, Josh Hill's been hurt. Well, we don't know it until the next week.
Yeah.
And, you know, in NASCAR and other forms of sport, it's an open book. And, you know,
started,
in the NFL. Yeah,
don't get me started.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
And so that type of stuff just, okay, so then a guy has a bad weekend. We're like, wow, man, this guy's riding like crap. This guy he's totally off the pace.
Right.
Oh, he's got a broken wrist.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we didn't know that.
Right.
You know,
I mean, are they afraid? Does it boil down to that the team managers are afraid another rider will target that area of the body? Because that is just the most asinine thing I've ever heard. I mean, you know, is that what it is?
Supercross is such a confidence game. You have to have your confidence. And so no rider ever wants to show weakness because then there goes the confidence and the other riders will take advantage of that. And I mean, you know, I've been retired for 10 years. It's it drives me nuts. And I think back, okay, you know, how would I have done it?
Right. How would
probably
you
the same way.
Would
might
you, yeah.
Not right, but that's the way it is.
Have you done that? I mean, in your racing career, have you totally lied about injuries or to the press or been nursing something and not told anybody just because of that confidence?
I think you try to lie to yourself.
right.
Motocross the Nations in 92, my first trip. Where I had that famous shot of the bike being laid over, dragging the bar.
Right.
And Jim Up, Australia. In the final practice before the race, I fell and kind of ripped my right thumb, kind of ripped it back, you know, bruised it, you know, all of the ligaments and tendons. And I could barely hold on to the handlebar when we were doing opening ceremonies and when I was on the gate. And, I remember I came in from practice, and Brian Lunas was actually working on my bikes that day, and I said, man, I hurt my thumb. And I don't know if he slapped me or if he, like, something significant happened. And I'm thinking that he, like, slapped me in the face and told me to shut up about it, don't tell anybody, and go do what I have to do and worry about it tonight.
Really?
And I remember just being frightened. Like,
Jesus, wow.
Oh, my goodness. You know, but if this would happen with Bob and Rick and Damon and, you know, on down the line, I guess that's what I got to do. And the gate drop for the first moto, I never thought about it. Had two of the best rides, you know, of my career. We ended up winning as a team. And afterwards, you know, I got to put two hands on the champagne bottle. So it really didn't matter that one didn't work.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
And I had you know, five other hands helping me lift the trophy. So
it's that time for a commercial. Sorry, guys, got to pay the bills.
Thanks for listening to the BTOsports.com podcast show. Please don't forget that BTO is the world leader in aftermarket motocross parts for the bike or body. You'll find deals like a Shoei VFXW helmet for $309.99, 45% off. or Smith Piston Goggles for $32.99, 65% off. Your order can be shipped anywhere in the USA for free, or if you're not in the USA, we ship worldwide. Check it out at btosports.com.
I've talked to Weege about this, like, and I mean, I think he thinks that I'm lobbying for a job or something. Trust me, I'm not photogenic. I'm not cameragenic or whatever. But, you know, I'm not a huge NASCAR guy, but I've watched shows here and there, and there's a crew chief on there by the name of Larry McReynolds. And he goes on and tells you everything about that track and the car and dialing the toe in and out on the suspension. Pardon me, what they're doing to the chassis for that track, tires. I mean, as a guy that didn't like NASCAR, my interest was piqued. I was like, wow, that is really interesting. And I've told Weege, you know, we should, our sport should appeal to gearheads. I mean, a segment of the sport should appeal to the gearheads and be like, this is what we're doing for this track. The tire, suspension, subframes, handlebars, I mean, you name it. And they don't do that. They don't concentrate on that. And part of that is the team's
comes
problem.
Comes down to airtime.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
you could be right about that.
If, you know, I mean, if we had more airtime, and that's why we do a little bit more stuff in the when we do like a 2.5 or 3 or 3.5 hour live show on speed,
right,
then what you guys will get from Dallas this week, you're going to have 2 1-hour shows, right, that are going to air on Sunday. And so the balance is between features and interviews versus racing. And it's 50-50.
Yeah.
Some people are like, man, I wish we had more features and we could talk about this, or I wish I had an interview. That was great.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other guy sitting right next to him is like, man, I can't believe we didn't get to see all of the heat races and we didn't get every lap of the last chance.
Right. Yeah, I guess you're right. You're not going to make everybody happy with an hour or 40 minutes or however long it breaks down.
Yeah, and that's really what it boils down to, because we would love to do that stuff. And what's great for the motocross is that, you know, and for supercross in general, is this new show, The Moto, you know.
Yeah, Fuel.
Was it Inside the Outdoors. It's Troy did a great job on that and the whole crew, and I can't wait to watch those. It's really exciting to see the inside story on last year's championship, you
have
know,
you,
and
have
in the
you
summer.
Seen any?
So,
have you seen any yet?
I think the first four have aired, right?
Yeah.
Upstill, Colorado, I believe it was,
So. And you've seen them?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, how gold is Tony? Just pure cinematic gold.
It's great for the show. I will give you that.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That was a big talk in this week in the impound after the race with the mechanics. So, Goose told me he's never been so interested in TV.
Yeah, and and Goose has been a father, you know, a father to four kids that race motocross, and you know, I can't begin to put myself in Tony's shoes, and it's easy, you know, to criticize if you don't like him.
The one thing that
you can say is that it's interesting.
Yeah, that's all I mean. I mean, right or wrong, I don't know. It's just it's drama. It's gold to me. But a little birdie told me that you may have something going on for the outdoors this year. Is there anything you can confirm, or do you know anything or anything as far as?
Not at this point.
I want to talk about now there's been some controversy with Justin Barcia and his aggressive / a tad dirty style. As somebody that once hoofed Larocco in the ribs with his boot on and has gotten a few scraps here
has he kicked anyone yet? Call me if he does.
What do you make of that?
Oh, man.
What do you make of that? Because I mean, you, he's kind of like a young Emig, a little bit, right? Like you.
Well,
I wasn't around in your day, but
than what I was.
Wow.
You know,
don't give yourself some credit, Fro. Come on.
He's aggressive. He kind of has that youthful, you know, that youthful innocence that he. You know, he's just out there going for it. He's not, you know, it's supercross, you know. Come on, you're not just out there racing lap times against each other. And that's every now and then you've got to be a little hand-to-hand combat, you know. and I think a lot of the riders are jealous all of a sudden, you know, and then they're getting angry because of that. And that's the way it is. What do you want?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean,
got the job. The other guy comes in and takes it. He's not happy. What do you expect these guys to do?
Yeah.
I don't expect any of them to roll over and go, okay, Justin, go ahead. But I don't expect Justin to go, oh, you know, you're a veteran guy. I better just chill out and fall in here.
Yeah.
Screw that. Get out of my way.
Right.
I'm faster. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get in front of you. And finally in Toronto, he did.
Right. So you see no problem with anything he's done this year that you've seen. It's just all aggressive racing.
You know, well, I haven't seen any of the stuff that's in, like, practice. You know, when you're getting into these lap times and qualifying practice,
mm-hmm.
I think that there is a respect level that that I don't know because I didn't see the events happen.
Right.
If you get in somebody's way, you're definitely out of line. There's a respect that has to go on there. You know, my day, we never really had that, so it wasn't an issue.
Yep.
But it certainly, you go out there, and that's all part of the mental game.
Mm-hmm.
Is getting inside of somebody's head or setting a, you know, making a statement. So I love it. The fans love him.
Yeah.
TV loves him. I love him.
I'm driving the bandwagon. I think he's great for the sport. I think it's awesome. And his originality and his brashness and all that. I think it's just like we need the J-Laws of the sport. We need Justin Barshas. We need Ryan Dungey's. You know what I mean? It's all great. Now, you never want to see anybody get hurt, so it's a bummer that Reed, Stewart, Grant, and Short are all out, the top four from last year. But, man, we've had a great season, haven't we?
Yeah, and it ain't over yet. And, it, you know, you talk about we got a couple of guys that are battling out for the championship, but there's still other guys that have the opportunity to get in there and win a race. Chad Reed should be back. Around Houston, I believe. I don't think we're going to see Stewart back, but we'll see. Hoping that Grant would get back, but I know that he's got some great leadership there, and they're going to make sure that he's totally prepared before.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Josh Grant.
Yep.
Grant Langston looking pretty doubtful that we'll see him.
I don't think we see him till the outdoors, huh? Langston.
Yeah. So. But that's also, this is part of the sport. You know, it's a dangerous sport at times, and you really do have to be 100% ready to go before you get out there, or you could injure yourself even worse again. You know?
Yeah. No, it's been great. And it's unluckily for Hill that he's banged himself up because he was really turning it on and make it into a three-man race. But what do you see going on down the road? Would you see Dungey laying up a little bit until it becomes near the end? I mean, is Dungey has to win one of these, or what do you think?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Whenever I make comments like this, people got to know that even if it's now or on the Speed CBS broadcast, is that I try to lay it out, okay, if I'm Dungey, here's what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm Villopoto, here's what I need to do. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And when I call races and all that stuff, and the fact that I work with Fox Racing, that has no bearing on my race call. Because if you look at it, you know, I still am heavily involved with Team Green and Kawasaki. That's the bikes I ride. That I consider that part of my team, if you will. So, you know, I don't call any favorites or anything like that. But if I'm Dungey, I need to win soon.
Right.
I need to, but the thing he's been going through, I believe, and I don't speak to him a lot right now. He's really been keeping to himself, and he's just been getting pulled every which way, is that what I'm seeing is that he's going through a bit of a growth period, like a learning period,
mm-hmm.
and he's having to get over these mental obstacles and all this pressure that is involved in and trying to win this championship. And there's kind of this middle area here. Last 2 weeks, he's been second.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? He's been, 4 seconds off of the lead?
Yeah.
His only track position. And so Villopoto's doing what he needs to do. He's mastered the starts. He's been edging Dungey out just barely, getting the track position and getting out front and doing what Villopoto needs to do. Dungey, on the other hand, he's been doing a great job of just keep working hard and keep focus. Now, it doesn't look like that he's done anything, you know, really spectacular because he hasn't won,
mm-hmm.
but he is putting in as good of rides as what Villopoto is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this thing comes down to it. Like I said, for Villopoto, is clear. Got to go win, and yep. he's been doing. For Dungy, I think he has to stop Villopoto. I think he has to make a statement. And, you know, in my championship, in the middle part, things got a little ugly. I had a little injury that I had to ride through.
Right.
And I made a statement in Dallas in the mud, like, okay, I'm just gonna try to take this thing this weekend. I got to show McGrath and everybody out there that I want this championship more than anyone, and I'm gonna do whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. And Dungy hasn't done that yet, but he's got a few races left. Well, we got seven left.
Seven left.
So, but certainly do it when it's at 17 points rather than, you know, yeah. 2 points.
Yeah, I remember that Dallas race. Yeah, your results had been kind of middling, and McGrath was coming on, and your win, and it was muddy, and your win was dominant at Dallas, and really put a spike through MC's hopes.
Yeah, and it really had to do with putting my foot down and going, okay, I'm just going to loosen up. I'm going to shed all the pressure, and I'm going to go just blow these guys away. And I remember flying into Dallas. On Friday afternoon, it was raining, and I was just like, yes, let it rain, baby, let it rain. I don't care if it's raining the whole time. I'm going to win the race no matter what tomorrow night. So it all had to do with attitude. And so, you know, if and when Dungy puts his mind to it, I'm not saying he's going to win, but what I'm saying is that if Villopoto has the same attitude, here we've got Dungy and Villopoto, they're both going, no, I think I'm going to win this. And then we get the spectacular Supercross race.
Yeah, we haven't seen them go at it yet. We haven't seen that race between them, you know?
And Trey Kennard's getting better. Mm-hmm. You know, Windham can get in there. You got Millsaps if he decides to show up. Well, you know, hopefully he doesn't have his injury from last. You know, there's a lot of guys that can get in there and shake this up.
Yeah.
And if I'm one of the other guys, I'm saying, why am I letting these guys, you know, go out and do this? Grab the start, race them hard, force them into the type of race that somebody that's in the points lead is going, hey, I don't want nothing to do with this guy. He's out of control.
Right.
You know, and then you can have somebody else win.
Yeah.
You know, then it gets really crazy, you know. So
let me ask you this. I have my own opinion. We talked about this on the Moto show, the show I have on Monday nights. We talked about this. When Reed comes back, does he win? A, does he win? B, if he does win, if you believe he can win, does he lay up and let Ryan pass him and help out the points lead? Or what's your take on all that? I know we're a little ways away. I texted Reed today, asked him if he was in for Dallas, and he said not sure. So I take that as a no. But we're a little ways away from him coming back. But what are your thoughts when he does?
Well, there's just so many contributing factors, but the fact that Chad showed up to Daytona with a broken thumb and qualified fastest of the 450s,
mm-hmm.
pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Is he rested? Is the fact that Ellie's getting ready to have a baby here in another month, is that going to weigh on his mind? Is there going to be distractions? I don't know. He certainly is capable of doing whatever he wants to do.
Right.
You know, and if he decides that he wants to come back and race for the win, he's going to race for the win.
In a situation,
by no means do I think he's going to lay up.
No.
And let anyone by. I don't think it's going to happen, no matter what.
Right. In situations,
you got to earn it.
In situations like that in your past, and I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but surely it's happened. Does the factory usually pay the win bonuses out anyways? We were arguing about the bench racing about that. And
the only time that anything remotely close to that came about was with Bradshaw in the 92 Supercross Championship. And I was riding 250 Supercross along with him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the day that he just couldn't get it done. And it was like pretty much, you know, if you're up there, you know, don't pass him if they're, you know, or let him by, or just,
yeah.
you know, don't impede his progress. And it was a very unique situation, but I never went past him because I certainly didn't expect to see him come back towards me. I was like fifth or sixth,
yeah.
trying to beat Jean-Michel Bale for the first time. And Bale's like, Bale was even laying back
because
he didn't want Stanton to win the thing.
It's crazy.
And so here I'm thinking, I'm going to pass Jean-Michel Bale. I'm going to beat Jean-Michel Bale. And he's, you know, basically putting around.
Right.
Going, Emig, back out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And finally, once he had got close to Bradshaw, he just said, oh, okay, I think I'll just take off now. And he left me and Bradshaw and just
off. So. He's finally like, well, clearly Bradshaw's not going to get this done. So I'm gonna pull out. But okay, so again, that was at the very last race, and there was some orders issued. But you're right, though. Generally speaking, if Reedy comes back at Houston, that's still a little ways away to start issuing orders, right? Is that what you're kind of getting at?
Yeah, I can't see it happen, but I do think that Dungy, Villopoto, they're going to be. I think it's going to be much more even between if Reed and Stewart came back than, let's say, like a year ago. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Villopoto won some races at the end and showed that, oh, okay, now I'm on the start of this.
Right.
And I think you're going to see something very similar to that, that as much respect that I have for Reed and Stewart, and I truly want to give them all of the respect that they have earned and deserve, but Dungy and Villopoto are championship contenders. They now know and believe wholeheartedly that they can beat anybody out there.
Right.
And so it's not going to be, Reed Stewart 1-2 and then, 15 seconds behind is everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
There's some serious contenders, and they're going to have to go prove themselves, but I believe that they will do that.
Christoph Porcel, if he was on a 450, would he be right up there for the win in your mind?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Pretty impressed with
him. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
But the thing about the French riders, specifically, is that the transition to the big bike, so many of the French riders are just this ultra talented, just have this beautiful style on the bike and all this. And it's much more than that when you get to the top level.
Right.
And so what we haven't seen, Christoph is certainly an accomplished world champion, supercross champion here, has been at the top of his game. But once you get there, it's a whole nother level of desire and determination and work ethic and the mental strength that you have to have and what you have to endure. And it's gnarly.
Right.
And so,
yeah, good points.
Only Jean-Michel Bell's been the only guy to be able to withstand that. So,
right.
Is Porcel going to be the first guy in 91?
Yeah, 19 years, 20, almost 20 years. God, we're getting old. That's a long time ago. As always, Fro, thank you for your insight. Some great, great points, and I hope people listen to this come away with learning a little bit more about the 2010 Supercross season and all that goes on in the booth for sure. So. Thank you. I appreciate it. Always candid, always a good guest.
Yeah, well, I appreciate everybody watching our broadcast on Speed and CBS, and to really acknowledge the crew that we have on the Supercross team, whether it's the broadcasters, our crew that are in the truck, the cameramen, what they do, everyone at Felda Entertainment that to put on the shows, not just the TV show, but the live show. There's a lot of work that goes into it, and I'm just a little sliver, a little piece of that puzzle, and I really enjoy being part of it. So,
right on.
You know.
Well, yeah, thank you. Well said, and thank you, Fro, and I guess I'll see you this weekend in Dallas.
All right. I'll see you Friday.
See ya.
This has been the BTOSports.com podcast show, brought to you by Trans World Motocross. Don't forget to check out some of our past shows, including motocross legends such as
The Beast from the East, Damon Bradshaw.
It got to the point where I didn't want to leave home, and once I got to the race, I wasn't into it. If I wasn't going to give 100%, I'm not going to take their money.
The working class hero, Doug Henry.
It was definitely an emotional moment for me, just thinking to myself, that's it, and it's amazing the stuff that goes through your head in a short amount of time of the things that, that I was going to miss.
The Dogger, Ron Machine.
Until you really open your ears and you want to listen to what they're saying, it's like beating a dead horse. I mean, and I know from personal experience, did anybody ever sit me down? Of course, everybody did.
Go Circuits, Mitch Payton.
There's two ways to make the money. One is you can sign for money, or two, you can earn the money. I'm a high believer in earning the money. I think they ride better when they earn the money.
7-time Jeremy McGrath.
I was so mad, like so disappointed and so frustrated that I had pulled pick and I left. Every point counts. I could kick myself to this day for not just riding around in tents. It's been no problem. My ego got in the way, you know?
The O Show, Johnny O'Mara.
Stuff that you'd sit there if you didn't even want to ride it, you just wanted to just look at it all day. I mean, I got a chance to test all that. I like that era I was in. I really do.
Search Mathis on the iTunes Store to find these and many more great podcasts. I won't let this die. You know I've got this bad up in the atmosphere. Another reason not to fear the sky.